Cincinnati City Council voted last Wednesday to approve a zoning change for a hotly contested Hyde Park Square development. That left the hundreds of Hyde Park residents who opposed the change wondering, are elected officials listening to us? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about how city officials make decisions and balance the concerns of the community with the city's needs overall are Cincinnati City Council member Mark Jeffries. Welcome back, Councilmember Jeffries.
Thank you for having me.
East Price Hill Improvement Association President Amber Kassam. Thanks for being here, Amber.
Thanks for having me.
And Save Hyde Park Square organizer John Zinser. Well, welcome to the program, John.
Nice to be here, Lucy. Thank you.
Councilmember Jeffries, walk us through what City Council approved with the Hyde Park Square zoning request.
Yeah, so what was proposed, what's called a planned development. So if you think about a plot of land, there's what is allowed there by right for the current zoning code. And then the developer came in with what's called a planned development. So there's really three parts to the planned development. There's the historic Allais building that is there. Which is about half occupied. It was to renovate that, make it, fix it up. There's no air conditioning, for example. There's no parking for the folks, 46 units, and they will have parking. So that's one. And that part of the project was not controversial. The second part was where the Coldwell Banker building is today, where the old Kroger used to be. And that part is to replace that with a hotel, a boutique hotel, what's called a boutique hotel. And at the street level, that would be the same height as the Allais, but then set back, it would be higher. And the third part of the project is behind the Hyde Park Square itself is a surface parking lot. There's 81 spots today. They're private. They're not open to the public. And the plan there was to put a underground garage underneath and then housing on top. And the controversy really came primarily with that and the height of the hotel is the setback. So the current zoning allows for 50 feet, and this would be 85 feet. So that was a lot of the discussion and the controversy.
Yeah. John, why did you and your group oppose this zoning change?
What's been happening across the city of the last several years is the use of this tool that the council member mentions, the PD. And basically, the PD is a one-stop shopping system for developers, and it allows them to do what they need to do. And the tool makes sense for certain complexities of putting a few pieces together. But what really pushed the button for the community was this enormous scope of this, the size and the mass. 86 feet versus 50 feet, which is the current zoning, that's 71%. And now that they have the PD, they can actually add another 10% without any public input at all. So that would be 93 feet. It's almost double. And you're talking about something that's now going to run literally from Edwards on one side to Michigan Avenue on the other side. It's the size of a container ship dropped into a historic neighborhood. That made everybody really uncomfortable. That's why you see all the yellow signs around. It's just too big. Nobody in Hyde Park's opposed to development. We are opposed to this development and the tool by which it's going to be done.
Mm. Amber, you don't live in Hyde Park, but I understand you stood with Hyde Park residents like John who opposed this change. Why? Why did you feel like it was important to have your voice heard on this?
Because particularly with Connected Communities last year, we saw how overwhelming neighborhood opposition and resident opposition was just steamrolled and ignored with the foe engagement. We saw last summer also how the Village of Daybreak residents in Bond Hill were also steamrolled. And, I would challenge that they're the only Black HOA in the city, and for their rights not to be respected really hurt me. And now I'm seeing the great people of Hyde Park, and I live in Price Hill. I'm a Price Hill girl. So if this can happen to the only Black HOA in the city and the wealthy affluent in Hyde Park, we have no chance.
I do want to read an email that we got from Shannon. Shannon writes, I'd like to say that a lot of residents like myself chose to express our support via email rather than show up for the council hearings. We support the new development and improvements like this, particularly getting rid of the one-story buildings along the square that never should have been built in the first place. The design does a good job of maintaining the height of the existing historic buildings along the square and stepping up to the south. It is not too big. So that's Shannon's opinion. John, you're shaking your head. I know you do not agree with that. Councilmember Jeffries, I want to circle back to you about the point that Amber raises. There was considerable organized opposition to this zoning change in Hyde Park. A council majority, including you, voted to approve it despite that. And that has some residents asking, are council members listening to us? So are you listening?
Yeah. So a couple things. First, we are, because we heard some of the concerns, traffic, parking, and I'll get to each one of these. Effect on small business. We heard each of those, which we need a plan for. The first point that I would make is I think there's a miss of expectations and we need to take a step back around community engagement and development with community councils overall. Because I think what you're seeing is what is driving council is the need for more housing and of all kinds. We have 3,500 homeless CPS kids. So we need income restricted housing, but we also need market rate housing. Why? Because we need to grow. Why do we need to grow? Because for every 1,000 residents we add to the city, we get $1 million in earnings tax, roughly. For every 1,000 we decline, we lose $1 million. In the out couple of years, we're going to have a $27 million deficit in 2 years, 40 plus, 50 plus. And there are things that we have to do to make sure that we're streamlining our budget. But one way out of that is, yes, we have to streamline, but we have to grow. And we have to grow units of housing. So I think that's the conversation that we have to have in the disconnect between the community councils and here. And yes, what I would say, for example, because the argument back is, well, why'd you approve a hotel? Well, we can't have the perfect development. I would have preferred more housing. I would prefer more housing in every case. But, you know, you can't just say only, you know, you're only going to have this or that and reject. Why? What are the important things to consider? One, if you look at San Francisco, for example, they have averaged 2.5 permits per 1,000 people. In Cincinnati, we're about 8 or 9. In Austin, they're 18. We do not want to be 2.5. What's happened in San Francisco and LA and a lot of these cities is just way too expensive. The average home in San Francisco is $1.7 million. And we're starting to see some of that in Cincinnati, where it's becoming less affordable overall for middle-income people and lower-income people. And so that's what's really driving a lot of the discussion. So it's not that we didn't hear the concerns. And I think the next steps, and to John offered the invitation, would you sit down and work on these issues? Yes. In fact, I've already been back and forth with people on ped safety and talking to small business owners. And so because the other thing, to be clear, is the choice last week was between the plan development and the alternative. And the alternative actually had about a quarter as much parking by right that they could build and more units of housing. So if the concerns are too much traffic, parking, okay, by voting this down, you're actually going to get what we saw in the Wasson Way by La Rosa's, where you voted down a housing unit and you got, in that case, a Hampton Inn, which was not the better outcome. And so I think those are the things that we need a larger discussion around the goal of the city and why we need more housing. And then I think we have to come to some common understanding across communities and neighborhoods. Okay, what does that mean? And I think it means sitting down and discussing this, you know, kind of like we are now, and a lot more dialogue going forward.
We're talking about what Cincinnati residents expect from their elected leaders and how city council members balance the concerns of the community with the city's needs overall. Do you want to weigh in? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wbxu.org. John, I want to give you a chance to respond to that. You know, the Councilmember Jeffries just laid out this argument that, hey, this city needs more housing of all kinds, that the choice last week was the plan development or this alternative that, in his view, would have been worse for some of the concerns that Hyde Park residents have. What do you think about that?
I think that's a false dichotomy. And there certainly was plenty of third and fourth and fifth options that we never got to. Now, I do think Councilmember Jeffries, especially, and several other members of council, were inundated and did some listening for sure. Our team kept people phoning, kept people emailing, and I had a really great sit down with the council member just about a week before the vote. And absolutely, there was some listening happening. What I didn't feel happen was any changes because of that. There wasn't any action from that. And you are just about to touch on a really big question of what is the role for the neighborhood councils and the community councils in this conversational process? The one thing that I come back to that council members just mentioning right now, what also was on the table really was a threat by the developer that I don't think ever had a chance to materialize. And Councilmember Jeffries and everybody else on council received a very careful walkthrough by a couple of different architects that said they can't do the picture that they showed up by the current zoning. What Hyde Park really wanted, not just the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council, not just the 14 other neighborhood councils like the one Amber represents, not just four other organizations, but more than 4,000 people, almost five, who signed a change.org position, what they really wanted was, wait, let's stop this discussion and start a different and better one. And that was a possibility. Any one of the council members who voted for this could have said, we'll take 30 days. I'll sit down as the marriage counselor, mediator between the neighborhood and the developer. But that never happened. For the first moment, when planning committee staff was collecting information, they received more than 700 emails. That was off scale. When we all got together for the planning commission meeting in the first week of March, over 5.5 hours of testimony. That was off scale. That was the moment when leadership could have come in and said, wait a minute, something needs to change in this conversation. That shouldn't have come on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. That could have come 3 months ago. And that would have given us a chance. The building that they threatened to build if they didn't get the PD is actually not legally possible by the current zoning. They would have had rooms that would have had no windows and no way out. They would have had to build landlocked rooms. They would have blocked the historical backside of the Allais building. They would have had to build right up to it. And the fact of the matter is it would have been a bit more than the number of parking spots. It would have been a little over 200. Yep, sure would have been a problem. Wouldn't have been great if they had done the worst thing they possibly could have. I don't think any developer wants to build the worst thing they've ever built, especially after all of this attention and all of this energy. It wouldn't have been a good thing for anybody, but it certainly wouldn't have been as bad as what may now happen, because under the PD, there really are far fewer controls and ways for things to come back around. And we keep hearing council say, you know you all need to work together, but we don't see council saying, let me help you work together. Here's the way we can do this. There is a plan on the table from the developer about using a pay-for system that's used by a lot of other developers as well. Doesn't feel like a place where we're probably going to find our voice well respected at this point.
Okay, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to take a quick break, and later in the program, we'll discuss property tax reform and the impact changes could have on public schools. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about what Cincinnati residents expect from their elected leaders and how city council members balance the concerns of the community with the city's needs overall. My guests are Cincinnati City Council Member Mark Jeffries, East Price Hill Improvement Association President Amber Kassem, and Save Hyde Park Square Organizer John Zinser. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Amber, before the break, we had heard from Councilmember Jeffries about some of the thoughts that went into his decision-making process. We heard John's response. I want to hear from you.
Yeah, I think they're both valid. And I want to actually urge the council member and the city administration and all of us residents in Cincinnati, this isn't about community council voice being ignored. This is about resident voice being ignored, because they're not listening to residents either. All right. So it's really easy to bucket community councils by 15, 20 or 50 as a whole bunch of NIMBY crazy aged persons, but or that working people can't come to community councils. But really, this is about resident voice, and they're not listening to that either. I'd like to move forward in saying resident voice is being ignored. And we, too, are elected. And guess what? They live across the street from me, and they can catch me on Warsaw if they don't like something. We take motions from the floor. I would love to see City Hall take motions from the floor. We also use Robert's Rules to try to build consensus and make sure that minority voice has a space and also an opportunity to be inserted. And I just really would ask for us all to talk about resident voice and not just community council voice.
Mm-hmm. We do have some callers on the line who've been waiting patiently. Hi, Alexis. Thanks for your call. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I want to say thank you to all the residents in Cincinnati that show up to your community council meeting. It's incredibly hard to do, to take time out of your week to serve your community, and it really makes a difference. I also want to say that because of the priority for building housing by this current administration, in OTR at least, city council often defers leadership in solving infrastructure issues to developers like Model Group or 3CDC, and I've found them to be pretty dismissive and uncollaborative while they trumpet their work to the community. Meanwhile, aspirations of the residents are rarely heard, answered, or served.
Okay. Thank you, Alexis. Councilmember Jeffries, would you like to respond to this? We're hearing a lot from Amber, from Alexis, about just listening to residents.
Yeah, I mean, to Amber, because to Alexis on, I would respectfully disagree. We had a huge issue on parking north of Over the Rhine in and around Findlay. Residents said the solution we were proposing didn't work, and we actually paused it, and we came back and renegotiated it, and actually came back with a better solution. So respectfully, I disagree. I think that we did. That's a great example on an issue that she's very passionate about. I'd say two other things. I 100% agree on it should be residents. Like, and community councils are a mechanism to get that input. But I think the challenge that we have right now is also the way that we engage, get community and community council input differs across the city. And so, frankly, it's great, maybe great for lobbyists, because it's like, oh, you have a project in Hyde Park, and then you have one in Oakley or whatever, or in Walnut Hills, and it's a different community council, a different process, and you need somebody to navigate it. I think we need to have a very clear, same process, where it's all public. I mean, we've had situations where there's honestly been almost extortion from community councils saying, give us this money, and where law enforcement has been called. And so I think we need it public.
You mean extortion of developers?
Yes, where they said, we need $30,000 for our community council in order for this project to move forward. And I think we need standard process across the board. That wasn't in this case, obviously.
Yeah.
To be super clear. The other thing I would say is to the point of, I think it was said, no developer wants to build a horrible development after this attention. And that, I think, is the point. Is that I think we have to put our focus now on where do we go from here. So I suggested kind of three steps. One was we need a reset of the relationship, the quote-unquote marriage counselor, because even if we voted against the plan development, the community would have to work with this developer because they own the property and they're going to build something. And clearly there's no trust. And then the second thing is I do think we need a architectural design review board where the community can input. What does this thing look like? Because my point in council was there's a lot of really beautiful 85-foot buildings. There's a lot of really ugly foot 50. And in fact, the Coldwell Banker is 20 feet and it's not really very attractive. And so I think we should put our attention to how do we make that structure fit the neighborhood where it, you know, feels like the historic nature of the neighborhood. And then the final that I mentioned I'm already working on is co-create on plans around pedestrian safety, around traffic, make sure that Edwards Road is not closed to parking, and work with CPS on some of these issues as well. So that, I think, is the road forward.
What about this idea that John raised before the break about pausing, like voting at some point, hey, let's take a breather, let's take 30 days to have better communication between the neighborhood and the developers? Was that ever something you all talked about on council?
We didn't talk about it on council. I mean, what was before us was an up or down vote. We weren't considering a delay. I mean, look, what I would say, it comes back to this, and it's not, oh, we're all in bed with developers. If it's Bond Hill, every single neighborhood, and frankly, in Hyde Park, I can't think of a neighborhood where there was not community opposition historically. Like almost every, in fact, they opposed the Wasson Way. There were some people who opposed the Wasson Way, and now everybody loves it. And so if we say, no, it has to be exactly this kind, then what we end up with is a San Francisco where there's no building, and then we have no housing, no growth, and then we're back to the 70s and 80s where we're not growing and we're having to cut. So that is the greater context. that I think all of us need to have a conversation around how, because all of us are in agreement on our city's goals, that we need to grow, I believe. And we have to achieve growth, because if you're not growing, you're dying. Then the question becomes, how do we achieve that growth? And I think that's the dialogue that I think we need. And we need to get on the same page, because I don't think this is helpful to have this kind of conflict. I think we all need to get on the same page.
Okay. Thank you, Alexis. I just want to note that we don't have any police records or anything to back up what you just talked about the a community council out there asking a developer for money. So we, I'm not trying to dispute you, but we don't have any records to verify that or point to with that sort of thing. We do have some more callers on the line. Michelle, thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have lived in the Hyde Park area for over 20 years. And at one point, this is to Jeffrey's growth and needing more livable space. In 2013, an entire side of Shaw Avenue removed without anybody's, conversation. There was no discussion whatsoever, and displaced almost 300 people by tearing out all of these apartment buildings that were affordable to put up million-dollar condos. Hmm. So how do we avoid situations like that? You want growth, but there are plenty of developers, and in this case, North American Properties, who just came and threw us all out and put up million-dollar condos.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm going to stop you there. Councilmember Jeffries.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of that situation, but I'll give you a parallel recent one, the Clifton Colony apartments in Clifton, which have been affordable units, and then they went on the market, and now they're going to be student housing, which in retrospect, we and the administration even said we should have stepped in and intervened to keep them affordable. And there are a couple other properties that are going to face similar situations. Anytime we see that affordable units are going to become market rate, I think we have to figure out what tools do we have in order to protect those. So I'm not familiar with this specific example, but I've seen it happen elsewhere.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. We have some other callers on the line. We also have other emails. Suellen writes, there's a difference between listening and hearing people's voices and doing what you want. We're given many opportunities to speak to the council, and there are many of us with different views. Just because council doesn't do what you want doesn't mean they're not doing the best for the whole. John, would you like to respond to that idea?
That's a completely legitimate point of view. And I think we're on at least a couple of different things. And one thing I want to make sure that we move a little bit closer to is the role of the community councils, neighborhood councils in this whole project. I agree with Michelle's point, just because I'm not someone who would deny an election or deny an outcome just because it isn't the one I wanted. Those are legitimate processes. But I do think when you have the overwhelming scope that we had, that raises a really important point. And I think the question really on the end, and I think the previous caller may have been raising towards this, the question is, do community councils, neighborhood councils have a role to play? And according to Plan Cincinnati, still operational, something that this PD was checked off against, the city expects its community organizations, such as community councils, business associations, community development corporations, and others, to actively participate in the development and revitalization of the communities. At the same time, the 2024 community engagement study or process outlined by the city doesn't mention the word community council or neighborhood council once. We are seeing this administration especially, but also preceding administrations, moving away from this idea and this model. There is a current thinking that we need to use more scientific methods, etc. That's valuable, but we can't possibly lose the benefit of this. Voluntary, as our first caller talked about, how much goes into being part of a community council, that interest base, meaning there's something that they're passionate about, the volunteerism of that, that is an American ideal. And at this point, it feels like this city is moving away from it, along with other cities. It feels like it's almost open season to say, we don't have to listen to neighborhood councils. We should get closer to residents. But what I'm seeing from the city at this point is a lack of interest in hearing what a neighborhood council, a community council brings forward. One quick example of this. In the actual plan that city staffing put back in front of council, they dropped all 14 of the neighborhood councils from other places who were saying, we don't want this. That sort of made it easy to say, this is just Hyde Park not wanting this. That's not the case. This city is made up of 52 neighborhoods. Not all of them have very healthy or very active community councils, neighborhood councils. Some do, some don't. But when they start talking to each other, that's a really important moment, and we should never lose that passion in any of the city discussions.
Councilor Jeffries?
Yeah, just a couple points on that, because I do think community councils have a very clear role, and I would respectfully disagree that we're not listening to them. Take pedestrian safety. Like, we put out, here are the requests, put in twice a year what your major requests are for ped safety. And then we rank them across the community, and we're taking the input. So all the speed humps you see are because communities are saying, we want this in our neighborhood. The same thing for a lot of public safety. It's like, okay, what are the big concerns that you have for public safety? And then we bring CPD in, and then we use Pivot. You have other techniques. And so we partner with the community and the community council. So I do think on development, we need to rethink how we're doing it, because clearly there are missed expectations between what our goals are as a city and what community councils are comfortable with. And that's where we need to focus around development. But I do think in other areas, we do. I mean, I go out to three community councils a month, and there to listen and there to take input.
We have some callers we weren't able to get to. John says he thinks the traffic study was flawed for the Hyde Park development because it wasn't done during school hours. Not the John in the studio, but a different John. And Mark called in to say a lot of people aren't really that upset about the Hyde Park Square development, but the ones who are being vocal. Sorry we couldn't get you on the air, John and Mark, but thank you for listening. We have a lot more we could have talked about, but we run out of time. I apologize. I've been talking with Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries, East Priced Hill Improvement Association President Amber Kassam, and Save Hyde Park Square organizer John Zinser. Thank you all so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll talk about property tax reform and the impact changes could have on public schools. This is Cincinnati Edition.